Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Taylor Radio. In this episode, we're going to cover the current situation, the feeling of the country. We're going to take the pulse of the nation regarding COVID and opening up. The U.S. we're coming in to summer. And what else does that mean? That means it's getting hot as heck out there. People want to get out of their homes. They want to go out and bask in the sun. What states are opening up? What does this mean? And how do people feel about it? Then I'm going to jump into the perspective of China in the United States. How we handle this situation differently, and what does it mean moving forward? As usual, you can follow me on my website, tstuch.com, tstuch.com. Follow me on Twitter. You can also find the link to my new merch, tstuch1, T-S-T-U-C-H, the number one. Follow me on YouTube. Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe. T-A-Y-L-O-R, space stuch, S-T-U-C-H. Follow me on Instagram. See some funny videos up there. T-A-Y-L-O-R, R-A-D-I-O, Taylor Radio. Thank you. And enjoy this episode. Let's jump into it, guys. So today is Monday, the 18th of May, and things are moving fast. The economies around the United States are starting to open. Some of them are, at least. I live in Texas, and Texas is looking like it's a go. I drove around a little bit this weekend. Traffic was pretty fucking backed up. I know a lot of places are starting to open up, and we are going to be in a very interesting space very soon. I suspect that these COVID numbers are going to continue to go up, and it's just we live in a hard time because it's hard to know what's true and what's not, especially with the COVID situation. It's hard to know exactly how reliable all the information is, how reliable all the data is, while at the same time, there are some things we do know. Some things we do know is it's not as bad in some places as it is in others. For example, like New York. The outbreak seems to have been pretty bad there, whereas in other places, like, for example, Texas and L.A. and other, even Washington State, where it was one of the epicenters in the U.S., it's not nearly as bad as it was, and it seems like New York eclipsed it pretty quickly. So there's lots of unknowns around that, though. So we know, okay, it's not as bad in other parts of the country as it is in New York, and maybe like Louisiana, maybe like New Orleans. However, the question remains, why is that? Why is that the case? And I haven't seen anything compelling. I haven't seen any compelling answers to that. I haven't heard people really addressing that. And some other things we know is it looks like most of the people that are dying are older. So we know that. And I know that it might not sound very compassionate, but the argument for me, the biggest argument for using that kind of data is especially to help make sure the economy gets going. Now, I know that some people, I was talking to a Chinese friend of mine who was like, hey, look, I mean, she was trying to kind of position herself. I don't think she was doing this on purpose. It was just more of a distressing kind of situation where she's like, look, in China or in Asia, they didn't put the economy before the people. And I get that. Some people are saying, look, it's money before lives. But everybody's got to realize that's bullshit. That's a bullshit proposition. Now, don't get me wrong. There is a little bit of truthness to that. And for example, somebody could argue, hey, these billionaires want us to go back to work for their companies because they're losing on revenue. Right? If the economy goes, there goes their shit. Actually, there are some people I follow online that I know are in real estate that I think that was possibly their angle. Some people lived in some areas that would be hit pretty hard by this regarding real estate, and I wondered if that affected their judgment from the beginning. But there is a legitimate issue with the economy shutting down, and that is supply chain. And people that are so compassionate, it's like, yes, I understand. We need to be compassionate. We want to have, we want to care for these people. We want people to survive. Also, as I've pointed out a million times on this show, we don't know, since we don't know what the long-term consequences of this disease are, it is important that we do not just let it fly without any kind of mitigation factor. And what I mean by mitigation factors are, like, you know, I've said this before, I don't think people should be running to the clubs. I don't think people should be running back to the gyms in full force, right? Like, to some extent, this virus isn't so bad that we can't get back into getting things running. But it appears we have to get things running back in a different way. We can't get back to running things the way they previously were. And I, as I've said before, I've been on rants. Everyone is obsessed with getting back to normal. And to a degree, I understand that. And to a degree, I disagree with that. And to a degree, I agree with it. So one thing is that we're people and we're social animals. And so we need to get back to some semblance of normalcy there. But the question is, at what level, at what scale can we get back to some kind of social normalcy? So I'm involved in a Taekwondo school, and I think, okay, hey, small, you know, it's not a good idea to have a full a class full of like 50 people crammed into a small space. So I've talked to, you know, we've discussed how it should be less people, more classes, so people are more spaced out. There's less opportunity for people to be like breathing down each other's throats, gonna lay off sparring for a while. So that's what I mean by taking mitigation factors or taking mitigation actions. Another one would be, you know, clubs, nightclubs and bars are gonna take a hit. I think that there should be, people should be allowed to go to some of these things, but it just does not seem wise for everyone to go, hey, let's go out, cram into a place where there's going to be, you know, hundreds of people all together, right up against each other. That, to me, sounds like a bad idea. In fact, in South Korea, they just came out with a situation where they had it under control, and somebody who had it went to a nightclub and they spread it and they have another outbreak going on. So once again, this virus is not as bad as the plague, right? This virus isn't going to kill 50% of the people that get it. The thing is we don't know what effects it could have. We don't know, you know, we just, there's so many things we don't know. And so we should be careful. We should not just want it to spread to people without it, you know, without any kind of mitigation. Now, there is I've noticed a shift in the feeling, a shift in the dialogue. So we've been, you know, talking about it for a while, if you've been with me here, is that people, at first people were more with the lockdown, then we've kind of been set against each other in pro-lockdown and pro-let it rip. When really we need something in between. We kind of have to have like a new economy, one where restaurants have to figure out, we have to figure out a way for restaurants to operate on less occupancy. We're going to have to figure out a way for people to socialize in a different way, but still be able to socialize. We got to figure some of these things out. And at least we have to figure out a way to be able to mitigate the next one, the next pandemic. So, you know, China showed that we know what China's going to do. You know, the next time a pandemic comes out of China, they know what they're going to do. And in fact, I don't know if the government will have their shit together or not, right? I don't know what they'll do. But I will say this, that if they're smart, which they are smart, you know, they're pretty smart over there, despite the fact that they're evil, the Chinese Communist Party, you know, they're pretty tactful. If they're smart, they know that their population is ready for another pandemic at any time. And if they're smart enough, they will be preparing now. They will be preparing now to have lockdown plans in place that when you have an outbreak in an area, they will lock down an entire city like they did previously. They'll have to figure out a way again for logistics, for food and everything. And they'll probably developing these things now. Now, you also got to remember, for the Chinese Communist Party, it's also beneficial for them to have these rules for other types of situations as well. Maybe they just need to control the masses and they don't want people to protest and, you know, things to be breaking out. So they'll probably like these rules regardless. But I'm seeing people like Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan was at the beginning of this thing, was much more in the cautionary camp, and I think he still is to some degree, but he was more like, hey, this thing is more deadly than the flu. He still says so himself. But basically his stance is like, hey, we need to Okay, so Rogan's stance, from what I have seen, it's more in opposition to California's way of dealing with the virus. So California, Gavin Newsom, I guess, who's the governor there, has been ordering, they have all of these very strict rules about what you can do and what you can't do. And I guess Rogan and some of these other guys that he has on his podcast know that some of these rules are absolutely ridiculous. And the way Rogan described it was, it's like infantilizing the population of California. Like, oh, you can go here, you can't go there. And I know he's not a fan of it. And other people like Elon Musk have been pushing for the lockdowns to end in California for a while, even though California announced that they were going to have their lockdown go for a whole nother couple months. And people are just like, look, we just can't do this shit. We just can't sit in lockdown. So now I would say that there is definitely there is a much larger wave, momentum, pushing into ending the lockdowns. And I think we're going to see this everywhere, especially as the economic pressure comes down on the states that do not open up. So you've got places like California and New York and whoever the hell's still shut down hardcore, maybe in Michigan, where, you know, listening to some other shows that I listen to, it sounds like California's having problems paying to, for their prisons. They're letting out all these prisoners, and they are going to have trouble with paying first responders. And, you know, it's just the whole economy is going to tank and people are going to leave the state. They're going to have no tax base. And that is going to be a huge problem for the states that continue to lock down. What's going to be interesting is seeing the move from the states that are continued to lock down to the states that are opening up. For example, like Texas, or for example, Georgia or Florida. And I have to be honest, I'm extremely lucky. Now, assuming that this virus isn't so bad and I'm fine in 2 years and I don't fucking, my balls don't fall off because I got it or some shit, assuming everything's good, then I would say that I am supremely lucky to have been born here in Texas. And the fact that my entire life, Texas has been okay economically. And it looks like as long as this virus doesn't go nuts, it looks like I will be in a position where I will be surrounded by another thriving economy. Because you got to remember, guys, even in a depression, even in a severe recession, it doesn't mean that every place in every city and every part of the country has no jobs. But what it means is that certain parts of the country, there's no work, large swaths of the country. Maybe people can't get up and move to other parts of the country. That was a big one back in 2008, 2009, was that people didn't have the same mobility, or at least they didn't move like they did in the past. So, we'll be right back with some more interesting information. So hopefully the economy is able to bounce back. I think everybody's in agreement with that. The economy, I don't think it was great the last few years, but I think it was better than the way it was going the last few months. And real quick there, I want to digress. People have talked a lot about, we've been talking about economics a lot, about China and America in the past and America in the present. And it's very hard to figure out cause and effect, and because there's so many variables involved in the economy, it's impossible to narrow down completely. But I would say that I once read one of the flaws in how we measure GDP is it's really based on activity. It's not necessarily like our gross domestic product is more based on how much activity is happening versus how much, like it's not a good measure of value. And I heard that once and I didn't really know exactly what that meant. Like, hey, this is maybe not a good estimation of the value of an economy. It's more or less the value of activity happening at a particular time in the economy. But it's the activity, it's about activity more so than value. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of like thinking about being busy versus really being productive, right? And it's hard to wrap your head around that, except for the fact that I live around Houston, and I noticed that the last few years, I've got side hustles. I've got my own side businesses. I, you know, work online. I've been in a small family business. And I can tell you that being in the places that I'm in and the people that I interact with, I mean, I've had to hire contractors and see them quit and watch them walk away. Gotta be honest, like, drive around the city, go to any city, drive around the city, and it doesn't look that great. Lots of people are doing shit, you know, like a lot of people, you know, we got a lot of delivery guys that are making a little bit of money. You know, we got a lot of people that are making a little bit of money in some construction. You know, we got some people that are making good money, but there's a lot of people that are kind of scrounging around towards the bottom. A lot of people, but there's a lot of activity. You know what I'm saying? So it's like those people can find work. A lot of people can find work. It's just not really valuable work. It's not a really, you're not going to get paid a lot for a lot of the work that's out there. It's like, yeah, you could be a waiter. You could be a waitress. You could work at a boutique shop as a cashier. You could be a delivery guy. You could, you know, there's lots of all types of little things here and there, big being landscaping. There's all kinds of activity happening in the economy. But there's also, and I don't want to discount the fact that there are a lot of really well-paying jobs around my city. There are. There's lots. But there's also a lot of just shit. And with the economy that my city has, you just wouldn't expect to see as much of the crud as you see. Because it kind of, it makes me think about that activity versus value. How much of what we're doing is really value, right? Because the people that are on the side of the road doing basic stuff or driving around, dropping off your packages at the cashier's desk, people bringing you food, these aren't really high value jobs. They're just kind of things people do. They're extra services that you can afford in an economy where there's enough money going around. But it's not necessarily, there doesn't seem to be a lot of innovation going on. Now, this kind of pushes me into another topic of the United States and China. Now, I am, you know, anti-CCP guy. But at the same time, like, we have to kind of look at what's happening within our countries and between our countries, you know, between China and the United States. What's interesting is there's a guy that I like following on Twitter. His name is Balaji. I can't pronounce the rest of his name. But he has been on this coronavirus thing for a while. He's a tech guy. He's an investor. He's helped co-fund companies, and he's, you know, math guy, statistics guy, all that. Smart guy, but he's been in the business field for a long time making money. And he was talking about the differences between the way the United States handled the virus versus like the way China handled it. And he was discussing how, look, he made a good point. He's like, look, the morality of it aside, you know, just the way that the state deployed resources. I actually think that's a good way kind of to describe it. This is my take on it. I'm not speaking for him. But from what I got about what he said was that basically the way that the Chinese government was able to deploy resources towards getting, you know, towards fighting this thing appears to look like they did a much better job. He also made a good point of the fact that we basically did that the West pretty much copied China in its response. And that is an important point that people were pointing out from the beginning. I mean, I remember in January and February, people kept, so the people that were watching this thing, we were all watching and talking about this thing back in January and February, and people were talking about, you know, the Chinese model, and if we end up locking down the country and this, that, then it will be end up copying the Chinese model. And I mean, you could say that to a degree. I think some of it could be copying. Some of it could just be that's what you do. Like, those are the only options you have. But regardless of that, of the copying issue, I should skip over that. What I want to get at is he made a really good point. He basically was talking about how the United States government doesn't have the smartest people in the room. He was saying that in the United States, the smartest people are not doing government research, right? The smartest people are not in government. The smartest people are in companies. They're in VCs. They're in tech startups at Silicon Valley. They're on Wall Street. They're not involved in the government function. And as a result, we have a very, you know, incompetent government. We don't have good, you know, we don't have a lot of good people. Like, he, you know, not only him, but other people have made this point. You know, where is the Manhattan Project for this virus, right? Where was the NASA program for this virus, right? In, you know, the 60s, we pulled NASA together and we supposedly went to the moon. You know, in the 40s, we developed the nuclear bomb. Where was that for this situation? It looks like our government capacity has failed. Now, I am not a government control advocate, so I don't want the government to have a lot of control. But what I'm saying is, within the realm of control they already have, within their already controlled realm, they rendered themselves not very competent, is what I am getting at. That they could have gone ahead and, you know, had some shit in place, but for some reason, nothing seemed to have really been in place. And that's an interesting scenario that has played out. And it makes me wonder, the thing that worries me about it is our ability to compete or to have strategy. I am concerned about, say, our military strategy regarding, say, China, our adversary, is clearly our government isn't, you know, it's just not functioning at the highest levels. And I don't know, you know, how long that's been the case, but would we be able to defend against an attack on certain resources or assets in other parts of the world? It looks to me like the United States is extremely vulnerable to new power players like China. Now, I know that there's you know, geopolitical guys out there that would kind of probably run this into the ground, but I think it's worth looking at. I think it's definitely worth looking at the level of incompetence. Think about how incompetent our federal government was, guys, this time around. Think about it, right? They, as this virus was coming from China to the rest of the world, the government was telling people, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Not a problem. Don't worry about it. Not a problem. Don't worry about it. Oh, don't wear a mask. You don't need to wear a mask. Then they said, okay, now we need lockdowns. Now they say, you know, oh, you need a mask. There was so much incompetence in messaging. We didn't have the kits. You know, we didn't have testing resources, all this stuff. And regardless of what someone wants to say about the test being correct or wrong, because I've read some really good analysis on the inaccuracy of tests in other countries, that's fine. But what I'm getting at is that even if the other countries are doing shitty tests, it still says something that we still could not figure out a good test. In a crisis situation, our tests were rendered not very accurate. Not even comparing to the rest of the world, just saying, like, look, we really don't have, we never had a lot of good testing capacity. We just didn't have it. You know, we weren't going to trace people because we don't have the capacity. We don't have the resources. We're too big of a country. Well, here we are. So how are we going to go forward? And so listening to this Balaji conversation, he's got a really good one with Anthony Pompliano, the Bitcoin guy. And it just really makes you wonder how our country can go forward. How are we going to go forward when we know, and Eric Weinstein's been talking about this a lot too, how our leaders, our elites, quote unquote, are asleep at the wheel. Like, this crisis revealed that nobody knows what the heck they're doing. Nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody has a plan of how to get shit done, how to work this out. Everyone's just kind of running around by the seat of their pants, right? And to me, the way I look at it is, we have this system of elites who have been scraping cream off the top, right? They tax the shit out of everybody. They throw you in jail for little things. They keep themselves out of jail. But they've been very privileged because the United States for so long hasn't dealt with such real crisis that they were able to hide their incompetence. Now we can see how incompetent they really are. And how do we move forward with this? How do we move forward as a country? This is why in the last episode or the episode before, I talked a little bit more about more of like a nationalist idea and about immigration and stuff, because these kinds of crises reveal how important it is for a country to be able to come together. It is so important. It is so imperative. We have to be able to be on the same page. And I've thought about that a lot. Well, okay, not a lot, but a little bit. I've thought about it a little bit. And it's an important question to ask. You know, I am I'm a big fan of the localism, the idea of keeping things at the smallest scale as possible, letting people in their towns, cities, and states make their decisions. And at the same time, though, as we scale up, we have a national government. And we do have to be careful about eroding a national identity. I don't think the national identity should be so overriding that the national government dictates what everybody does in their city. But, I mean, there should be a cultural ethos, it seems. It should be okay for people to talk about, you know, I guess a patriotism is not really okay anymore. It has not been for a while, for the last few years. And people do nothing but disparage American history, and everything's racist, and we're an imperial, horrible power, and there's nothing that can be done, and we just need to tear it down. And I guess when I look at that ethos of we need to tear it down, we're just horrible supremacist colonizers, with that kind of idea in mind, I don't see how we actually move forward into the next iteration of the United States. I don't see it. I'm taking my own initiative, so I just set up my 3D printer this week. This weekend, I'm trying to see what kind of things I can start making and creating, and personally, I'm gonna try to be more of an entrepreneur in this country, because I know that's what we need, and that's what I need, and that's what I know the country needs, or at least that's what I think the country needs, and needs more entrepreneurs and people trying shit out. And at the same time, though, I compare us to, say, like a China situation, and China does have a nationalist, much more of a nationalist fervor. And I wonder, again, I'll say this again, I know I said it in one of the previous podcasts, but I wonder, will that confer on China an advantage in dealing with us? Will that give them an innovative advantage? You know, for example, like, how much of an advantage will they have, if they have an advantage? I don't know. Like, I legitimately don't know the state of play, say, between the United States and China. But I will say this, that if you've got a country of young people who are smart and driven and who feel like they have a duty to their country to do certain things, how does that compare to a country like the United States where nobody gives a I'm trying to reduce my cussing, about anybody? And I don't, you know, of course I'm exaggerating here, but the point is, in the United States, we're a very degenerate society, very, very degenerate. I mean, like, it's everything is literally about, there's most people do not look at a greater plan in their own lives. Like, at least I don't see it. You know, I see lots of wandering around, of lots of aimless millennials wandering around, like, how did we get here? Like, how did I turn 30? I'm not 30, but I'm just talking in general. I kind of see this idea of, like, how did I get to be 30 years old with no family and what seems to be, like, a job that I didn't think I was never going to be rich. You know, like, I think a lot of people kind of, you know, you slide into that middle income life, you take on all this debt, and then you don't realize till a few years in, like, oh, I'm never going to be rich. I'm just always going to be in this fucking shithole. And what I mean by that is, you know, just in a perpetual cycle of paying off my mortgage and my car payments and, you know, begging for 3 weeks vacation every year. So anyway, I think I'm done with my rant for now, but it's going to be interesting to see how we move forward. Some people speculate that we will see a burst of entrepreneurial activity. And, you know, it's people like me, this whole virus really did push me in that direction. I have been on the move more and more, creating content, and, like, you know, like, unfortunately, I've had to import stuff from China because we don't make it here. But it's like I saw an opportunity, like, hey, the government is not providing masks, so I'm going to get the masks, or I'm going to get the face shields, or I'm going to get stuff done. What can I make on my 3D printer? Let's figure it out, you know. So that's where I'm at now. And I hope that the rest of the country, as we open up, I hope that we can figure out a new way forward and realize that we have to find our way. Anyway, that's it. You can follow me on my website, tstuch.com, tstuch.com. Like and subscribe on the YouTube channel. It's doing really poor. I get a lot more listens on this audio version than I do on YouTube, which is still just audio. Taylor space Stuch, T-A-Y-L-O-R space Stuch, S-T-U-C-H. You can follow me on Instagram. I put up some funny videos that I put up on TikTok. That's Taylor Radio, T-A-Y-L-O-R R-A-D-I-O. You can follow me on Instagram, on Twitter, T-Stuch1, T-S-T-U-C-H-1. And yeah, and buy my shirt. You can find it on Twitter. I gotta put it on my website. All right, peace. Thank you.